वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Today we're reading from the prayers of Prahlad Maharaj to Nrisingadev. Text 18, Canto 7, Chapter 9. Soham priyasya suhrida paradevataya. Lila kathastava Nrisinga virincha gita. Anjastitarmyan ugrinan guna vipramukto. Durga nite padajuga layahansa sangaha. Saha, that. Aham, I, Prahlad Maharaj. Priyasya, of the dearmost, Suhrida, well-wisher, Paradevataya, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lila Kataha, narrations of the pastimes, Tava, your, Nrisingha, O my Lord Nrisingadev, Virincha Gitaha, given by Lord Brahma by the disciplic succession. Anjaha, easily. Titarami, I shall cross. Anugrinam, constantly describing. Guna, by the modes of material nature. Vripamuktaha, specifically being uncontaminated. Durgani, all miserable conditions of life. Te, of you. Padayuga alaya, fully absorbed in meditation on the lotus feet. Hansa sangaha, having the association of the hansas, who are liberated persons who have no connection with material activities. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. O my Lord Nrisingadev, by engaging in your transcendental loving service in the association of devotees who are liberated souls, hansas, I shall become completely uncontaminated by the association of the three modes of material nature and be able to chant the glories of your lordship, who are so dear to me. I shall chant your glories, following exactly in the footsteps of Lord Brahma and his disciplic succession. In this way, I shall undoubtedly be able to cross the ocean of nations. Purport. A devotee's life and duty are very well explained herein. As soon as a devotee can chant the holy name and glories of the Supreme Lord, he certainly comes to the liberated position. Attachment for glorifying the Lord by hearing and chanting the holy name and activities of the Lord, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu, certainly brings one to the position where material contamination is absent. One should chant the bona fide songs received from the disciplic succession. In Bhagavad Gita it is said that the chanting is powerful when one follows the disciplic succession. Evam parampara praptam imam rajarshayo vidhu. Manufacturing many ways of chanting will never be effective. However, chanting the song or the narration left by the previous acharyas, Mahajana Jainakathasa Pantha, is extremely effective. And this process is very easy. Therefore, in this verse, Prahlad Maharaj uses the word anjaha, easily. Accepting the thoughts of exalted authorities through disciplic succession is certainly much easier than the method of mental speculation by which one tries to invent some means to understand the absolute truth. The best process is to accept the instructions of the previous acharyas and follow them. Then God-realization and self-realization become extremely easy. By following this easy method, one is liberated from the contamination of the material modes of nature, and thus one can certainly cross the ocean of nescience, in which there are many miserable conditions. By following in the footsteps of the great acharyas, one associates with the hamsas, or paramahamsas, those who are completely freed from material contamination. Indeed, by following the instructions of the acharyas, one is always freed from all material contamination, and thus one's life becomes successful, for one reaches the goal of life. This material world is miserable, regardless of one's standard of life. Of this there is no doubt. Attempts to mitigate the miseries of material existence by material methods will never be successful. One must take to Krishna consciousness to become really happy. Otherwise, happiness is impossible. One might say that becoming advanced in spiritual life also involves tapasya, voluntary acceptance of some inconvenience. However, such inconvenience is not as dangerous as material attempts to mitigate all miseries. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesa Sunyavari Paschati De Satarine Om Ajnana Timurandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Tasma Shri Gurave Namaha. So for the last 4 days, we've gone through 1 year of Srila Prabhupada's life. We heard on the first day that when Prabhupada left India from Calcutta, he reached Cochin on Janmashtami, and he celebrated Janmashtami on that day. And then after a 35-day trip, he came to Boston, then New York, Butler, Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, back in New York. In New York, Dr. Mishra's apartment, then 72nd Street. Then he came down to the Bowery. And at last, within this 1 year, the progress was very slow and full of inconveniences for Srila Prabhupada. But now, starting June, Srila Prabhupada has his own center. He didn't call it a temple yet because there were no deities installed. Prabhupada wanted to install deities, but because of the contamination of the hypocritical activities of the past religious practices that the young men and women had observed in their own youth, they weren't ready yet for deity worship. One time, Prabhupada suggested that we'll bring Radha Krishna marble murtis. And Howard Hayagriva, he immediately, with anger, he said, well, if you want marble statues, you got that in Christianity, because they have marble statues there of Jesus Christ and the mother, his mother Mary. So they had rejected what they considered to be hypocritical religious practices of their families. Now, these weren't homeless, destitute young men and women that were coming to Prabhupada. These were college professors, they were graduates, some of them had jobs, some of them were simply searchers, but they were educated young men and women, and they were seeking for the absolute truth, but they had no proper guidance so far. Although Mayavad Swamis had come, but most of them, for instance, the Ramakrishna Mission, one of the Swamis there, his name was Nikhilananda Swami. So he, Dr. Mishra, and many others, they adopted the Western lifestyle so that they would be accepted by the Westerners. They wore pants and suit, they smoked, they ate meat, some of them. So these young people were also not impressed by what they saw amongst the swamis and gurus. But with Prabhupada, he did not compromise. Exactly as he lived here in Vrindavan, we heard, that's how he was living in New York City. So these boys were attracted. But they had many questions and many misunderstandings. Brahmananda, when he was in college, he had a philosophy professor who was Freudian. Now, according to the psychoanalyst Freud, everything is based on sex desire. Is that true? According to Prahlad Maharaj, it's true, because the Adi Ras is that calm. So Brahmananda couldn't understand that. He said there must be something higher. So he argued with his teacher, his professor, that there's also religiosity. There are also higher aims in life. And then the professor countered him. He said, even those so-called higher religious principles are based on the desire for sex life. So Brahmananda, he saw no way out of becoming pure in his life. So he approached Prabhupada and asked him, that is it true that everything in this world is based on sex desire? And Prabhupada said, yes, it's true. But there's a higher spiritual world where even that desire is purified because it's in connection with Krishna and then is pure love. So one thing after another, the young men were coming in to Prabhupada and asking him. One time a young girl said, every time I chant, I see a red light. So Prabhupada said, you just keep chanting and you'll be all right. So these young men and young girls who were coming to Prabhupada, they were confused. And Prabhupada knew that simply by this chanting, all their misconceptions would be purified. Just as Lord Chaitanya says, because this chanting of Hare Krishna, no matter what our condition is, we can become purified. So Garga Muni, when he was Greg, a young boy, 18 years old, he said to Prabhupada, when I chant, anytime I chant, I start to cry. And Prabhupada said, well, that's very good, that's a sign of love. And the other devotees were looking, that's a sign of love when he cries. Yes, that's a sign of love, it's a natural sign of love. But Garga Muni, he would never bow down. When all the other devotees had learned to bow down when Prabhupada came in the room to give his lecture, Garga Muni stood. So Garga Muni asked the question that, why don't I feel like bowing down? Everyone else is bowing down, but I just don't want to bow down. So Prabhupada said, you should bow down. You bow down, and when you bow down, then you'll understand why you should bow down. So Prabhupada, he called this 22nd Avenue the kindergarten of spiritual life, because all these young boys and girls, they were coming from so many different backgrounds, but they were just getting the very essential basics of spiritual life, and that started with chanting and hearing. So Prabhupada had big plans. When he made his association of incorporation, he wrote that he would make a world place of pilgrimage. So according to the devotees, 22nd Avenue was that world place of pilgrimage. There was no other center. And they thought Prabhupada would stay with them in New York forever. Prabhupada said that those were happy days when he was there with all of his young new students. But Prabhupada knew that he had the whole world to conquer with the holy name. So one time, the United Nations, because there was a lot of turmoil going on in the 60s, and especially in America, there was a lot of demonstrations. The Okay. The United Nations invited Srila Prabhupada and the devotees to head up the prayer session of a peace vigil at the UN uptown. So they all went there one day and they started their kirtan. And they said, no, this is a silent vigil. So then they sat down and chanted japa for 4 hours. And this attracted attention that the UN had invited the devotees. So in the New York Times, an article came, and in the East Village Other, and articles were coming out now. And Prabhupada was very happy about this. He used to get them reprinted and handed out. At the same time it came out in the New York Times, just next to it was another article that America had bombed Vietnam, the two biggest cities. And this caused an uproar amongst the peace vigilants in America. So America was having turmoil. And at the same time, in the 60s, in India, there was much turmoil going on, because that was when Indira Gandhi legalized cow slaughter. Before that, cow slaughter was completely against the law, and she legalized it. So there were huge riots going on amongst the sadhus in the parliament, that how you can legalize in the land of Punya, how you can legalize this. So Mukunda and Janaki, who had just been initiated just a few weeks before, Mukunda always had this dream, and he told Prabhupada when he wanted to learn how to play the flute, he wanted to go to India. And he felt that now he had done his part, he had found the center for Prabhupada, he now had a new core of young men who were coming and living with him. It was practically like a temple already. He thought that now is the right time for him to go to India. So one day in October, he came to say goodbye to Srila Prabhupada. He said, "Prabhupada, we're going to leave for India now. I was wondering if you knew anyone that we could contact there in India." So Prabhupada gave him the name of Chandrasekhar Sharma, that's in Delhi, his contact. And Mukunda, he was suggesting to Prabhupada, because now he'd be gone, he'd be in India. He said, "Prabhupada, from here, I really think that you should start a center in San Francisco, because now in America, that's becoming the center of the counterculture." So Mukunda, he offered his obeisances to Prabhupada, and while they were saying goodbye like this, the last time they would see each other and who knows when, as he was bowing down, Prabhupada firmly says to him, "I would like you to open that center in San Francisco." So this was the last thing that Prabhupada said to Mukunda. And it was a seed in Mukunda. So he and Janaki and Joan left. They went back to their home state, which is Oregon, just above California. And there they had some old friends. They would become Shyam Sundar and his girlfriend Malati. Prabhupada would later marry them also. So they were now, if you happen to read the newspapers, there are huge forest fires going on in Oregon. And these forest fires were actually being started by rioters just to do mischief. Hundreds of people displaced, thousands of animals dying. So what Shyam Sundar's job was that he lived in the middle of a forest, and he would oversee that there were no forest fires going on. Then he would report if he saw anything. So the three of them went to tell Shyam Sundar about the Swami and how they were on their way to India just to say goodbye, and how the last thing Swamiji said was, "Why not start a center in San Francisco?" So Shyam Sundar really liked that idea. He said, "Look, if you do that, we'll come and help you. It can be all of us together. We'll start that center for Swamiji." Because they wanted Swamiji to come out to the West. They wanted to meet him. West and East is very far, 3,000 miles. So Mukunda still was determined to go to India. But by Krishna's arrangement, he started having nightmares about India. About drummers coming to attack him. So he realized at that time that yes, considering, and there was drought in India then, there were riots, the Indo-China war, just like right now there's always talk of war between India and China. Well, then the war was going on. So Mukunda, he finally came to his senses. He realized, what am I thinking of? I'm walking into a place where there's drought, where there are riots going on, there is a war going on. Better, I listen to Shyamasundar, I listen to Prabhupada, we'll go open that center for Prabhupada in San Francisco. So six devotees, and these six devotees played pivotal role throughout Prabhupada's development of ISKCON. That was Mukunda and Janaki, and then Jamuna and Gurudas, and Shyamasundar and Malati, the six pioneers of ISKCON. They got together, they went to San Francisco with the plan to open up a temple and invite Prabhupada. But they didn't have money. So they had a little istagosti. How are they going to get money? Well, we could sell drugs, that'd make it really fast. No. No, we don't want to make money like that, because it was the hippie culture, that's the way you made money then. No, we have to do something that Prabhupada would like. So Mukunda, being a musician, he had an idea. He said, we can make a huge concert and invite Prabhupada to sing and chant Hare Krishna at the concert. Yeah, that's a great idea. We'll get everybody to do a charity concert for the Swami, for him to come to San Francisco. The Swami is coming. So they started searching around. They had really big groups, the Grateful Dead, Big Brother and the Holding Company. These are all famous groups then in America for the young people. And they wanted Allen Ginsberg to come. Just by chance, Mukunda was walking on the road. Somebody named Wolf came up to me and said, what are you doing? Hare Krishna, I've seen you guys before in New York. So yeah, we're trying to get the Swami to come. Yeah, well, if you can have the Swami come, Allen Ginsberg should come. I know Allen Ginsberg. I'll call him up. I'll get him to come. So everything was coming together. All they needed was a temple. So Mukunda, he was assigned to find a temple, just like he found a temple in New York. And he found a place just near Haight-Ashbury, which was the epicenter of where all the hippies congregated, just a few blocks away. And it was just like, but bigger than 26 Second Avenue. It had the big storefront and a big place where they could have kirtaning classes, a place where Prabhupada could sit. Everything was the same, a washroom and a sink, the whole thing. So he got that place, and in the same building, he was able to get two apartments, one for Prabhupada and one for him and Janaki. So they were all set. Then they went and they decided where they were going to have their concert, at the Avalon Ballroom. All the Saturdays and Sundays were booked up for months. So let's have it on a Sunday. So they were going to have it a Sunday night, and they decided on, this was already December, they decided it would be January 29th. So they get their coins, they go to a payphone, they call up Swamiji, and they tell him the good news. That Swamiji, we have a temple, we have devotees, we're going to have a big concert on the 29th. We want you to come January 17th to get ready and see, meet all the devotees. So Prabhupada was very excited. Fine, how do I come? Oh, they didn't think of that. Then he holds the phone. Hey, Sam, how are we going to get to... We'll send you a ticket, Swamiji. Well, how do I get the ticket? Oh, they told him, prepaid, you go to United Airlines, give your name, show your passport, they'll give you the ticket. This is the first time Prabhupada would ever go on an airplane coming to San Francisco. So finally, they're getting everything together. They had to get the furniture, they had to make an altar, they got pictures, and because there are a lot of psychedelic head shops in San Francisco, they were able to get lots of beautiful pictures of Radha and Krishna, and they even found a deity of Krishna. He's standing like a little boy with a very sly, mischievous look on his face. They brought that. Later Prabhupada named him Kartamashi, the boss. So they were, because they had the experience how to set up the place in 26 Second Avenue, they were making a duplicate there in San Francisco. Finally, Prabhupada is about to arrive, And Mukunda, he starts advertising that anyone who come can, they should come to the airport, bring a flower, bring incense, dress in your finest hippie clothes, and we'll go meet the Swami. So about 50 hippies showed up. They didn't know who Prabhupada was. Nobody knew anybody else. But just by seeing these advertisements, they all showed up. And just 2 days before, there was a huge peace rally. 30,000 hippies had gotten together. So there were a lot of people in San Francisco at that time. And Allen Ginsberg had also come, Timothy Leary, all these great leaders of the psychedelic movement were there in San Francisco then, when Prabhupada was there. So Mukunda and the devotees, I thought this was really going to be a great meeting of the tribes, the Hare Krishna devotees and all the hippies and all the leaders of the hippies too. So they go to the airport, Prabhupada comes out, and they bow down, the devotees bow down, so everyone bows down, big kirtan, and this is the first time Prabhupada has come now to California. Prabhupada gets settled into his apartment, and a few days away, the first mridanga had arrived from India in New York. So they shipped that mridanga all the way to San Francisco. It was very carefully packed from India. It took months to reach. So they unpacked that mridanga, and they brought it up to Prabhupada. And when Prabhupada saw that mridanga, he started reminiscing. He said, my father, he wanted me to just play mridanga. He didn't want me to become any big advocate or anything. And I played the mridanga all day sometimes. He had a teacher, but my mother, she forced me to go to school. Otherwise, I would just play mridanga all day. And he was testing the heads. He showed them how to put the water. He explained to them, he tore off part of his dhoti and wrapped it around the mridanga. He said, this cloth should never come off of the mridanga. And then Mukunda, being a musician, he asked Prabhupada, will you teach me how to play mridanga? And Prabhupada said, yes, you bring that mridanga, I'll teach you right now. And then he explained, because Prabhupada himself was an expert musician, he explained the different beats. He explained different ragas, different timings, the six different breakups of the day, everything very scientific in Indian music. So he taught Mukunda the first beat, ki-ta-ta, 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 ki-ta. And then he taught him the second beat, ki-ta-ta, 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 ki-ta. And he showed him, you have to have your fingers at the right place. And when you're playing, you have to speak, because this is the way that you should. So Mukunda was completely, he couldn't get it. And Prabhupada's standing over him. And he's trying and trying. Finally, he gets it. And he's practicing and practicing. He's wondering, where is Srila Prabhupada? Is he here still? Because he had his eyes closed, just concentrating on the mridanga. And he looks over and he sees Prabhupada's feet. And Prabhupada's swaying back and forth, enjoying the mridanga playing. Then someone donates a harmonium. So with the harmonium, they bring it up to Prabhupada. He starts playing right away. None of them knew how musically astute Prabhupada was. But when the instruments came, then Prabhupada showed how wonderful he was of a musician. So the 29th, the musicians came to the ballroom, and thousands of hippies came. They had the fire department was there, and the manager was there, because there was a limit to how many people could come into the ballroom. And after that, only when people came out could other people come in. And Mukunda, he was collecting the tickets, and he noticed that Timothy Leary, he had come, but he reeked of alcohol. And Mukunda was thinking, now here's the leader of the psychedelic movement, and he's a drunkard. How is this possible? So his understanding of this of their movement, he was understanding that this is not for spiritual seeking. They're pleasure seekers, actually. So then he went in, and they had a whole light and sound show going, and strobe lights everywhere. I don't think you have this in India, but just amazing, just to increase the psychedelic effect. Psychedelic, how do you translate psychedelic? It's when the mind is affected by all of the senses just go wild, and then the mind also goes wild. Yeah, everything, and then you add intoxication to it, and you just lose your mind completely. You're completely absorbed in the senses. So that's what psychedelic means. And they had to perfected art, how to bring all the senses to the ultimate of sense gratification with these light and sound shows and the music and the intoxication. So then Mukunda goes up to check on the light people, and they say, hey, we made some tea, have some. He says, no, that's all right, because we don't drink tea. Just have a little. So they gave him a little cupful, he drank it, and they realized, oh, there's LSD in this. So all the devotees, they didn't know they were being given this LSD, and all of them had this altered consciousness throughout the whole program. So Mukunda, he was able to stay calm. He tried his best. And first they had one set of singers, and then Prabhupada, he enters, and he walks through the whole crowd. The crowd separates like an ocean, and they let him walk through. They have Allen Ginsberg on the stage, and Prabhupada sits next to Allen Ginsberg. Now, why was Allen Ginsberg so important? The holy name is the, and Prabhupada is a pure devotee, and he was going to chant the holy name. It's because he was popular as a leader amongst these youth. So if he was doing it, then they would feel that it's something worthwhile. So Prabhupada and Allen Ginsberg spoke for a moment quietly, and then Allen Ginsberg, he introduces the Maha Mantra very nicely, just as he had heard from Srila Prabhupada, that man means the mind, tra means deliver, this, and maha means great. So this Maha Mantra will free you from all of your mental turmoils. You simply listen to this Maha Mantra and chant along with us, and then you will come to a higher stage of consciousness. So he started the chanting. He had his little harmonium. And because he was chanting, everyone else started chanting. And then he turned over the chanting to Prabhupada. And then Prabhupada started to chant. And then Prabhupada gave the microphone back to Allen Ginsberg. And Allen Ginsberg began chanting. And Prabhupada got up and started to dance, just like Lord Chaitanya. And when Prabhupada got up to dance, everyone, thousands and thousands of hippies, they all got up and they started to dance. And because everyone was in altered consciousness, Mukunda included, he saw that the whole place became like one body. They all attained oneness in the chanting and the dancing, and everyone was in ecstasy together. Some people started rolling on the ground. Some people started getting into fetal forms, because the ecstasy was just too much for them. With Prabhupada dancing and everyone dancing and Allen Ginsberg chanting. And meanwhile, Mukunda looks over and he sees Kirtanananda. And Kirtanananda looks like he's going to kill him. And he was trying to read Kirtanananda's lips, and Kirtanananda kept saying, stop, stop. And Mukunda thought, what's the matter? Why should we stop? It's so ecstatic. He thought, maybe Swamiji will get sick. Maybe it's too much for Swamiji. But Swamiji was also in ecstasy. But because Kirtananda told him to stop, he started. And the musicians, when Prabhupada and Allen Ginsberg started to chant, all the musicians in the backstage, they also came out with their instruments. And the stage was packed with musicians chanting and singing and playing their musical instruments to Hare Krishna. It was a total success. But because Kirtananda kept saying, stop, stop, so Mukunda stopped it. He forced the musicians to stop. He forced the people to stop. And then Swamiji left the ballroom. And that was the end of the Hare Krishna part of it. Then they went on to all of the other players and the musicians, and they had a big night. But that night, thousands and thousands of young people were initiated into the chanting of Hare Krishna personally by Srila Prabhupada. And this made a huge impression upon all the young people there in San Francisco. And the temple became very popular. And then Prabhupada started a new program. He said, have a free lunch every day, because these youngsters, they're not getting proper nutrition. So they started a free lunch, and up to 200 people came every single day for that free lunch. And because they were doing charitable work, Malati used to go out to all the markets, and she'd get free donations of food. So this is just becoming bigger and bigger. And then one day Malati, she was out searching around, and we had Back to Godhead by that time, because before Prabhupada left New York, he wanted to start up his Back to Godhead magazine again. And Rai Ram, he used to be an illustrator for comics, so he knew about publishing. So Prabhupada made him the editor of the Back to Godhead magazine. And Brahmananda, he got the paper from his school. And Gargamuni, he bought mimeograph machines. There were no Xerox machines in those days. We had mimeograph machines. So he would print them out and collate them and staple them together. And the devotees started distributing Back to Godhead magazines. And they sent some over also to the devotees in San Francisco. So they were distributing the Back to Godhead magazines for donations, whatever people would give. Malati, she went to the pier one day, and she saw some unusual looking dolls. They looked Indian. So she brought one of them back. It's called Five Finger Discount. Five Finger Discount means she just took it with her. And she brought it to Prabhupada and showed him. And when Prabhupada saw this little figurine, he immediately offered his obeisances to that figurine. And he said, oh, Jagannath has come. Were there any more? There are two more. Yes, there was a white one and a yellow one. Yes, that's Jagannath's brother and sister. Bring them. So she went back the next day and brought them. The three deities were there then, Jagannath, Baladev, and Subhadra. And when they saw Prabhupada's worship of them, he explained that these are the deities that are worshipped in Jagannath Puri. They have a huge Rath festival every year for millions of people. So Shyam Sundar said, well, he was a carpenter, I can make big versions of these. Yes, yes, you make them. We'll put them in the temple. So this is how the deity worship was begun. This is how mass prasad distribution was begun. And then Prabhupada next began the Rath Yatra for the devotees. So now there were two centers. The New York devotees wanted Prabhupada back in New York, of course. They missed him because before Prabhupada left, Prabhupada was doing everything there. He was lecturing, he was leading the kirtans, he was leading the kirtans in the park, he was answering all the questions of the devotees, he was reading from his manuscripts. But when Prabhupada left to go to San Francisco, there was a void, a vacuum. Who was going to do this? So then they decided, well, Rai Ram, he can start giving the classes because he's read all the books. Brahmananda, he can start leading the kirtans. They would continue to go to the parks. And that way, gradually, gradually, they learned how to do all the things that Swamiji was doing for them. So they were becoming stronger in their spiritual life, but they still needed Swamiji. And Swamiji was needed in San Francisco because there were so many interested people. One day, a taxi stops in front of the temple, and the taxi driver comes out. He looked totally straight, not like a hippie. He said, you got any of those Back to Godhead magazines? I give them to whoever's in my taxi, and they read them. So, yeah, sure. And Mukunda ran in. He got 10 Back to Godheads, and his name was Jim. Jayananda's name? Jim. Took them back to Godhead magazines. This is great. So he went out, he distributed the magazines, and he came back. And Mukunda, when he came back the second time, he said, you want to meet the Swami? He's right upstairs. So he went upstairs, he met Prabhupada, and he became Jayananda. Jayananda, he was the first temple president at the San Francisco temple. He used to continue driving his taxi because that supported the temple, it paid for the rent. And he used to also take care of the whole maintenance of the temple. He would throw out the trash, he would fix the cars, anything that was needed, he knew how to do, because he was an engineer by profession, although he wasn't interested in being an engineer, so he became a taxi driver, and then he became a devotee. So all along the way, very quickly, Prabhupada was attracting these young people, and he was initiating them. The next initiation in marriage was going to be Sam and Melody. That was Shamsundar and Malati. And then after that, Joan and Joan would be Jamuna, and her husband-to-be would become Gurudas. So Prabhupada was attracting these young, educated men and women, and they had so many qualifications that they were using in Prabhupada's service. Gurudas was a photographer. That's why you'll see in those early shots so many photos of Prabhupada with Jamuna and so many shots of Prabhupada in San Francisco, because Gurudas was always there taking photos. And then you have Shamsundar as the carpenter. He made a beautiful altar for the temple. He made the deities. And then Prabhupada started the aarti. Everyone would offer a candle to Lord Jagannath. And then the offering food started. Then more initiations came. Then Murari, he was also a very, very artistic person. He made a beautiful box for the mridanga because he was afraid that someone might break Prabhupada's mridanga. So all these young boys and girls, they were coming together and trying to figure out how they could help the Swamiji with his preaching. But of course, the devotees wanted Swamiji back in New York. So eventually he went back there in April, and he continued with what he was doing, but now he wanted to start printing his books. So when he went back, he assigned Brahmananda, who he had made the temple president, to get his Bhagavad Gita printed. And Brahmananda, he went to every single publishing house in New York. Nobody was interested. It was Eastern philosophy, it was religious. Nobody felt that there would be much of a calling for that, an interest. But within the meantime, Prabhupada had made a record of the Hare Krishna mantra. You can see it in Prabhupada's house with Radha and Krishna on the cover. And that record was becoming very popular amongst the young people. There were some radio stations that played that record all night, because the young people like to hear Prabhupada singing Hare Krishna. So one day, Brahmananda received a letter from the Macmillan Printing House, Macmillan Company. It's the biggest printing company in New York. And one of the people there ordered one of these records. And Brahmananda ran to Prabhupada, look, we got a letter from Macmillan. They want our record. So Prabhupada said, yes, you dress up and you tell them that we have Bhagavad Gita. So Brahmana said, should I bring the manuscript? No, don't bring the manuscript. Should I say anything more? No, you just tell them that we have Bhagavad Gita. So Brahmananda went there one day with the record, and it turned out that the person who wrote the letter, he was in the accounting department. He had access to the Macmillan letterhead. So he wrote on the official letterhead, and Brahmananda brought the record in. They were standing there talking, and meanwhile, the CEO of Macmillan walks into the office, and the accounting person, he introduced that this is Bruce Scharf. He's come from the Hare Krishna and this is our CEO. So Brahmananda thought, he remembered what Prabhupada said, that he said exactly what Prabhupada told him to say, that we have Bhagavad Gita to print. And the CEO said, you have Bhagavad Gita? Yes, we have the Bhagavad Gita. It's translated by our Swamiji. So you bring it immediately. It's just what I'm looking for. He didn't even care about looking at the manuscript. He said, you bring it, we'll print it. So that's how the first Bhagavad Gita got printed by Macmillan. And we distributed that. They printed so many Bhagavad Gitas that they needed 10 full trains of paper to print all of those Bhagavad Gitas, because it became so popular, because by that time the devotees had started distributing Bhagavad Gita. So we'll hear more tomorrow. Tomorrow will be the last day, and then Shruti Kirti Prabhu will give 3 days of memories of Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.